Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. Because these are times that are asking us to evolve beyond the systems and paradigms that are collapsing. These are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. My guest today is Vanessa Harmony. Vanessa is a permaculturist, arborist, horticulturist. She is the founder and owner of Colorado Edible Forest, a plant nursery and consulting operation in Glenwood Springs. Welcome to The Inner Game, Vanessa.
Thanks for having me, Gwen.
It's so good to talk to you. I always love to kind of hear people's spiritual backgrounds, whether they grew up with something or when their spirituality really became alive in life. And I'd love to hear what that was for you.
Well, although I was exposed to some church going growing up, my main spirituality arose from my passion for nature and connection to animals and the natural world. So I don't know if it was because our household subscribed to Ranger Rick through the National Wildlife Federation, or we would get the newsletters from World Wildlife Fund, and maybe I was just exposed to those mailers, but I would go to a summer camp growing up near Estes Park in Colorado. It started off as wildlife camp, where it was all about learning about nature and wildlife and the earth. And then as you became a teenager, it became Teen Adventure, where you spent 5 days backpacking. So those times in the summer really forged my passion for being outdoors and my ethics and reverence for nature. And so I always knew I wanted to try to save the planet, which when I was little involved wanting to prevent global warming and prevent holes in the ozone layer, even though miraculously all of the countries of the world got together to help prevent holes in the ozone layer.
Yeah, that was a win.
And after I studied environmental studies in college, thinking that that would lead me to a pursuit that would allow me to save the planet, but found that not to be the case. I was not impressed by my options after college that seemed to be either regulation or public policy. And so I followed my brother to a job in the pharmaceutical services industry, working in a cubicle where I got good technology and business skills. But luckily, during that time, I came across an advertisement for a class about permaculture design. And when I saw all the things we were going to learn about, like beekeeping and making seed balls and edible plants, it seemed to hearken on all of those things I was passionate about. So I started studying permaculture design on the side. Mm.
And you have spent some time at our local amazing place, the Colorado Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. And I wonder, you know, what are the things that you really love about permaculture, and do you see it as sort of one of the solutions that we need right now?
Absolutely. What I like about permaculture design is that it uses nature as our model and as our instructor. So whether you're designing your career or your lifestyle or your garden or a farm or an orchard, what are things you observe in nature that work really well that you can mimic as a way to propel your designs? And so as anyone who has visited Jerome Osentowski and Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute know, the operation is very scrappy and makes a lot of good use of materials that might otherwise go to waste. Mm-hmm. But through 30 years of compulsive soil building, more than 30 years now, Jerome has managed to build a beautiful topsoil and a wonderful orchard full of fruit trees and berry bushes. Mm-hmm. And edible perennial plants.
Yeah, on the side of Basalt Mountain. I mean, it's a testament to what we can do to work with the land and nurture it. and stop extracting so much.
Right. And a lot of people seem to be looking for and expecting that maybe there will be some technological advance or solution that will get us out of our environmental crises. But in truth, we just need to look to nature and use all of the principles that we're already surrounded by, soil building and building habitat for wildlife and connecting with nature as a way to heal our own souls.
Yeah. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, because I mean, in my years as a sustainability consultant and all the other things that I've done, I'm realizing that what I see as really the biggest leverage point right now and what can cause a shift is for people to reclaim that innate connection that we have as human beings to the natural world that supports us, that makes our life possible, that is our first mother. And I wonder what that feels like for you, sort of on a daily basis, you know, to be in that deep relationship that you have with the natural world.
Well, growing up, the way we were taught to think about environmentalism, it almost taught us to feel guilty about our impact and guilty about our consumption. But when you get into permaculture design and into a career or a lifestyle or hobby where you're working with nature, you actually can feel empowered by the fact that you are an important part of the system. And so rather than getting downtrodden, you can feel inspired and know that you are able to have a positive impact on your surroundings. Mm. So the mission of my business is to grow food, build soil, and nurture nature. And I coach my customers and clients on all those things. The latter part refers not only to planting things that are going to build more biodiversity and more habitat for wildlife, but also nurturing our own connection to nature.
Yeah. Time and time again lately, I see things about, you know, we can't save what we don't love. And I think everybody would say, oh, I love nature. But there's a difference when you actually have a relationship with nature that's very alive. And I'm wondering if you can describe that reciprocity that you experience in the aliveness of that, you know, mutuality of the relationship.
Yeah, the more you are able to identify and connect with organisms, the more they become like your friends or your soap opera. So not growing up gardening or farming or anything, when I decided to quit my cubicle job and go to work as an apprentice as a forest garden apprentice, I didn't even know how to identify plants. I knew a few, but once I started studying and writing down and then looking up at night and my list of plants that I could identify grew, I realized that even out of my peripheral vision, I would know that, oh, there's that tree there's that plant there. And so just knowing your plant friends and your animal friends allows you to connect with them even peripherally when you don't even realize that you're doing it.
Hmm. I read something recently about houseplants and how they've been able to research and measure when you come near them, they have a response because you're the person who keeps them alive. You water them and feed them, hopefully. And that was amazing to me because long ago, some person that I was talking to suggested that I deepen my relationship with my houseplants. And at the time, I was like, really? What? But it makes sense when you think about it. It's like you're in relationship. It's a living thing. And from a quantum standpoint, we're all connected. We know this. So why wouldn't that be the case?
Yeah, and they have an energetic vibration. One time at Crimpy, as we call it for short, this student brought this device that he would put a probe in the soil near a plant, and it would turn the plant's waves into sonic
waves. I've heard that, yes.
And so it was really cool to see like the plum tree had a unique type of wave signature compared to the comfrey plant, compared to a pine tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so fascinating. You know, I want to talk a little bit about your years as, you know, someone in agriculture in this valley, where it's not easy to make a go of it, and what you've seen that might help us to understand what to focus on to create a more robust local food system.
Well, yeah, with our high cost of living here, we really sacrifice a lot and pay a high price to be able to stay here, and especially stay in a career like farming and agriculture that doesn't pay very well. You're paying yourself in quality of life more so than you are with money. And so we struggle with having enough community, and also people in the community having enough time to feel successful or on track enough to make time to build community. So we've seen that be a challenge, and sometimes people will move away just because they can't make it. Sometimes people are under a too great deal amount of stress. And so even though I know people struggle with the idea of our community growing rapidly, I do see the positive side of having more people be able to live in affordable housing here, so that we can continue to build more community, have more talent here, have more people willing to farm and be in agriculture and be a part of our small but growing community.
Yeah. So there's the balance of making sure we're taking care of the ecosystem and aware of its carrying capacity as we welcome more people here in a way that makes sense and doesn't destroy the ecosystem.
Right, and knowing that the humans are the ones that also have the power to steward our landscapes in a positive way. And so through my work, I just try to help people feel that empowerment and sense that even though the changes they might be making are very gradual, soil building takes a lot of years. It takes a lot of years for a fruit tree to come to bearing age, but we have to use those small, patient, slow solutions to improve our surroundings and to build our community. And I really appreciate the work you do with bioregionalism, which is very related.
Yeah, thanks. Let's talk a little bit about that. I want to first say that this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is Vanessa Harmony, and we're talking about the ecosystem where we live and how we relate to it on a very deep level, and how we can nurture it to continue to be a beautiful place for people to live and for all the other life to thrive here. And bioregionalism is a way of thinking about how we operate as humans on the landscape. We have these weird, random political divides that don't, you know, really relate to the landscape. Bioregionalism would allow us to create organizing structures that not only allow for us to take more of the landscape into account in our decision making, but actually have structures that would allow for greater stewardship of a specific landscape, like a watershed, like our Roaring Fork Valley. Something that I know that we need more of is native plants, and to be thinking more about how we nurture the plants and trees that will be most viable and most able to thrive here. And I wonder if you know if you want to say something about how your operation is making that possible, making, you know, native shrubs and trees possible, but also the cultural shift that comes along with that, of having people understand what is the benefit of native plants. Maybe you could say a little bit about that.
Well, native plants are definitely important. And then there's also semi-native and pseudo-native plants that are in the same, might be in the same genus and might also have the same beneficial relationships with the native wasps and native flies. But also acknowledging that just as human, like habitats are changing, shifting, so are plant habitats. So also trying to kind of be on the forward edge of planting things that might maybe not have been native, maybe not native yet, or maybe not native very long, but might be especially well adapted to work in harmony with our native insects and pollinators. So in my nursery, I offer fruit trees and berry bushes and edible herbaceous perennial plants and ground covers. And the goal is to have some sort of yield, like a fruit or a food crop that you can harvest, but also to build soil over time. And I always say that you should plant enough for the bears and for the deer because they need food sources too. And some people might be scared of planting fruit trees or berry bushes that because they'll attract bears, but I feel like the bears are primarily attracted to properly indisposed trash. And yeah, if we plant enough for the bears, especially up in the more rural areas, then they'll have less reason to have to come down to the cities and have conflicts with humans.
Mm. And putting it in perspective, you know, when people build soil, even in on their small or larger properties, what are the benefits of that to the resilience of the whole ecosystem here?
Well, here in the Rocky Mountains, we lack organic matter. And so by planting deciduous trees and shrubs that are shedding their leaves every year, that's all going to be food for the worms and for the microorganisms under the soil. And also the more diversity of plants you have above the soil, the more diversity of microorganisms under the soil there will be. And another important microorganism in the soil is mycorrhizal fungi that actually are like the plant internet. So they have a relationship with the plant where they're able to tell the plant if there's water or nutrients nearby or possibly a pest or a pathogen that is nearby, and the plant can appropriately respond. So if you are only looking at the above ground portion of your plant surroundings, you're actually missing half of the picture that is very important.
That's so interesting when you think about it from a connectivity kind of scale, like the ability of a landscape to be resilient is really dependent on that soil health, where that kind of communication that you're talking about can happen. Like, hey, we've got to move some more water over here. Or, hey, there's a disease happening, so we've got to, you know, create something else over here. And that's part of the ability of a landscape to be resilient. And that's really the purpose of that soil health, which is so important wherever we can build it, I would imagine.
Yeah, and healthy soil with high organic matter and high diversity of life is able to infiltrate water better. It's able to better temper extreme weather and temperatures, prevent soil erosion. Again, habitat for all of those soil microorganisms. And then I know the concept of earthing is popular, or grounding, where people intentionally will walk outdoors barefoot. And so it makes me wonder, like, is it that plant and tree root internet that people are connecting with that is yielding a positive feeling?
Exactly. That makes me think I want to hear that. There's a quote that you shared with me, and I asked you about, you know, like, how do you keep going when you're feeling, you know, grief for the world and for all the losses that we are experiencing. And maybe you could share that for a minute.
Yeah, my favorite quote is by Rachel Carson, and it's, "Those who dwell among the beauties and mysteries of the earth are never alone or weary of life."
That felt so important to me because we need to dwell among the beauty in order to retain our agency to keep going, to keep showing up, but to keep showing up fully alive and fully with all of our creativity, not just, you know, oh my God, give me another cup of coffee and so I can show up, but really with the courage and the creativity that the natural world can show us. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about some of the practices. You know, I know that everybody that has kind of a spiritual life and, you know, realizes that their wholeness and their well-being is important, that you have some practices that kind of keep you juicy and whole. And wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, there's always an internal dialogue going on in my brain, and whether that's me talking to myself or me talking to the birds or the spider or the worms or whoever I call them, whoever I encounter, human or otherwise. And so thanks to that, I can constantly be talking things out and never feel alone.
Yeah, it feels like that nurturing, that connection is just the awareness that, oh, that's a living being, you know, like the houseplants, you know, they'll respond to you. Mm-hmm. They do respond to you. And, you know, by engaging in that relationship, you nurture it.
Right, having an energetic conversation or even an actual dialogue.
Yep. There's a lot of guidance, I think, available to us in our relationship. That's the way Native Americans and indigenous cultures navigate, is through their relationship with the natural world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to us right now. You talked also about something that you're up against right now. You know, as I like to ask my guests about a growth edge that they're really taking on, something where they're growing, you know, or healing in some way. And I wonder if you could share something like that.
Sure. So early on in my permaculture training, I also took a permaculture teacher training, but it wasn't really about halfway through my career that I started to feel more comfortable and knowledgeable and experienced to start teaching. So in recent years, I've started offering workshops of my own or in collaboration with other organizations or teaching through Colorado Mountain College. And so that's very humbling, kind of being the guide to open people's eyes. Because there was a time when I knew nothing about nothing. And so just trying to hone my skills as a teacher and being aware and present of people's current abilities. And so that's been very humbling and something I've been working on. And it can be emotionally and spiritually draining after a class finishes, but also very fulfilling knowing that even if I maybe think I might have not conveyed something as well as I could have, that probably they got something out of it that is going to make a difference for the rest of their day or in their tomorrows.
Yeah. And I feel like the humbling piece is significant, because humility is something that also keeps coming up as a kind of leverage point for us in this transition we're trying to make as humanity. And I wonder how humility serves you when you experience it.
Well, farming keeps you very humble because nature doesn't wait, the seasons don't wait, the weather won't cooperate, and you have to, popular saying is to make hay while the sun shines. So, yeah, I guess it just keeps you from getting too confident and trying to plan your days to a T, because nature can totally knock down your plans.
Yeah, feels like there's an element of surrender that is also really important for us right now, to surrender our need for certainty
and control.
Yeah. And to be able to operate in a posture of uncertainty, and to be able to still, you know, feel some agency and bring our gifts forward, even in the midst of uncertainty. I wonder how you feel that.
Yeah. And when I first took my permaculture design class with Dave Jackie, it was the permaculture teacher training. He contacted each of the students individually before the class even began and asked us to figure out what was your deepest, darkest fear, because he wanted us to face that, knowing that is actually what is going to motivate you or to propel you. And so my biggest, deepest, darkest fear was failure. And so
I don't think you're the only one there.
But that is also what gets me up in the morning. And then I also have the luxury of now having chosen a career for myself that balances my physical and spiritual and intellectual and emotional intelligences. And so it's not like, so even if I can be afraid of failure, I know it's because I'm in the pursuit of what makes me happy and what makes me balanced. And it's not a job that I'm not passionate about or dread going to work to in the morning.
That feels like a very beautiful place to wrap up. Thank you so much, Vanessa. And thank you all for listening today. You can find Vanessa at her website, Colorado Edible Forest, all spelled out, .com. And she's got workshops and classes there that you can find out about. And you can find The Inner Game on Apple Podcasts and on the kdnk.org website and on my website, gwengarcelon.com, for all my other offerings. The music is Peter Mayer's song, Awake. And until next time, dwell among the beauties and mysteries of the earth, and you will never be alone.
Thank you, Gwen.